tea for the pleasure of Allah, the pleasure of Allah. Oh, you who believe.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. That is from the song Welcome Ramadan. It's a contemporary piece by Zain Bika to celebrate Islamic observance of Ramadan. It's a special month of the year devoted to inner reflection, God, good works, and self-control. And for more than 1.5 billion Muslims around the world, the third week of Ramadan is underway, along with the routine of fasting from sunrise to sunset. Coming up, we'll talk about the larger religious tradition of fasting. Joining us now to talk about the many traditions of Ramadan, including fasting, is Shakil Muhammad. He's outreach director at the Noor Islamic Cultural Center in Dublin. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How old is the tradition of Ramadan? Where did it come from?
We are talking about 1400 and almost 34 years ago. Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and peace be upon all the prophets before him. When he was migrated, he migrated from Mecca, his home city, to Medina, where he eventually established the first Muslim state. When he went there, he migrated there. After a couple of years, God ordained the Muslim community to fast. And according to the Quran, God says, "Oh, you believe, fasting is prescribed to you as it was prescribed to those before you, so that you may attain righteousness." So the purpose of the fasting is to attain righteousness, to become God conscious, to spiritually uplift yourself. So that's how fasting started. And it is a whole month of fasting. And the fasting month is called Ramadan. It is the ninth month in the Islamic calendar. Islamic calendar is also called Hijri calendar. And Hijri is the Arabic word which denotes the migration. So migration was actually the start of the counting of Islamic calendar. Ramadan is the ninth month in the Islamic calendar, and it's a lunar calendar. So lunar calendar is, as compared to Gregorian calendar, is 10 or 11 days shorter. So every year, the Ramadan starts 10 or 11 years before the previous year.
Okay.
Right? So, and then it rotates in a way in 33, 34 years, it rotates throughout the year as
okay.
compared to Gregorian. So Ramadan comes in summer and Ramadan also comes in winter. Right?
If you're just joining us, this is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Shakil Muhammad. He's outreach director at Noor Islamic Cultural Center in Dublin. We're talking about Ramadan and specifically today, fasting and the tradition of fasting. If you have a question or comment for Shakil Muhammad, you're welcome to join the conversation. 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we'd love to hear from people out there who are fasting. You know, how do you do it? How do you manage it? There's probably lots of suggestions you can share with the rest of us about how it's done and also how you break the fast. That's a tradition in and of itself. 614-292-8513. During Ramadan, how do people greet somebody who's a Muslim during Ramadan, you know, during Christmas or Hanukkah? It's Happy Hanukkah or Merry Christmas. Do you have a similar greeting?
Yes. It's called Ramadan Mubarak, which is, Mubarak is the Arabic word, and the meaning is Ramadan, blessed be the Ramadan. So that's how probably a week or two before the start of the Ramadan, people start getting into, you know, Ramadan Mubarak, Ramadan Mubarak.
Oh, they're like warming up.
Yeah, warming up for the Ramadan. So you get the feeling of it before even, you know, like a week or two before the Ramadan.
Oh, Ramadan Mubarak.
Yeah, Ramadan Mubarak. Yeah, thank you.
I was wondering about that. You start, of course, it's just like any holiday. You start preparing. Mm-hmm. People probably who have to do a lot of the cooking or and so forth start preparing and getting ready for that. But going fasting for 30 days is trying. Is there any mental buildup to that?
Absolutely. According to the ways of Prophet or the actions of Prophet, which are called hadith or his life, So Muslims have two primary sources. One is Quran, and the second is the sayings and actions of Prophet. So if we look at his actions and his sayings, he used to prepare at least a month in advance. The eighth month of Islamic calendar is called Sha'ban. So that was used by Prophet to be ready, to get ready for Ramadan. He used to fast more in month of Sha'ban, the eighth month, more than any other month except Ramadan, to kind of make his body get used to before even the start of the Ramadan. And Ramadan also has another very important attribute, and that is the relationship of Ramadan with Quran, the primary source of Muslims. Quran, according to the Islamic belief, is the literal words of God. So the command of God, the what God wants from the humanity, from the mankind, is there in Quran. And we believe it's the literal words of God, and it hasn't been changed since the day it was revealed to Prophet Muhammad. So Quran has a special relationship with Ramadan. So before the start of the Ramadan, a lot of people kind of get used to reading, reciting more Quran, and when they are in Ramadan, it increases even more. So that's kind of a mental preparation. From the physical perspective, some people fast a month before, you know, in the eighth month to get their body used to for the fasting. Then from the spiritual perspective, increase their prayers, increase recitation of Quran. So these two things go hand in hand, and by the time Ramadan starts, most people are kind of ready for, you know, for the fasting and for the spiritual upliftness experience that they experience during Ramadan.
Oh, we had a call. We lost it. To what extent, traditionally, are Muslims aware that there's a physiological change because of fasting that can affect how they feel, of course, but how they think and how they feel emotionally as well as physically?
Right. So, and the fasting tradition in Muslim world, and let me relate to my own childhood. So when I was, I believe, 9...
When did you start?
Yeah, 9 years or 10 years old. And actually, it was around the month of July, June, July. And I'm from that. I'm originally from that part of the world, which is very hot. I'm from Pakistan, so it was very hot at that time. And I still remember my mom. She used to remind me again and go take bath. And I still remember that. So the tradition in Muslim world, in the Muslim household, it starts for when you're a little child and you build it up. And every year, actually, my children, they were looking forward to Ramadan a couple of months ago because there is a different routine, a different experience. They feel challenged. Oh, I'm fasting the whole day and it's 16 hours.
Like kind of like growing up, a rite of passage.
Yeah, so I'm big now. I'm kind of getting growing up. So they feel challenged and they feel excited. And then Muslims have another interesting thing in Ramadan that is called long prayer, the night prayer in the mosques. And what happens in those special night prayers, the whole Quran is recited throughout the month. So a portion of Quran is recited every night. So by the time you're close to the end of the Ramadan, the whole Quran has been recited. So Imam is reciting and the community is listening to the recitation. So the whole families, male, female, children, everybody's flocking to the mosque. And these days in Noor Center, we have around 1,000 people every night standing behind Imam, children, females, males, standing and listening to recitation. So for children, it's a very interesting experience to go with their parents, be standing there, and they take pride. Oh, I was standing the whole time.
Like, how long does it last at night?
An hour and a half, or, you know, from 1 hour to 1.5 hours.
And is this before you break the fast at night, or
it's
is it after?
Okay.
Whatever you do, is don't lock your knees, right?
Yeah, that would have been tough.
As far as the month and the length of time, is that just a rant? I hate to use the word random because nothing's random. Mm-hmm. It was ordained. But what do we know about that length of time? Was that so that there would be enough time to recite the Quran? Is that have to do, or is it just what it is? It's a month, and that's what it.
Right. So the idea is, as a human being, we need reminders, and 1 month has been dedicated for a focused reminder, a focused rejuvenation in the spiritual upliftness. As the psychologists say, you need 23 days to either acquire the habit,
okay,
or to, you know, cut it off,
right,
a bad habit. So we got actually 7 grace days. We have 30 days.
A whole extra week to work on it.
We need more work, more time. so we have these 30 days to build up, to acquire some good habits, and try to avoid some bad habits, as those habits which are, wasteful or not required, unwanted. So Muslims use this opportunity, a lot of Muslims, after they get out of Ramadan, they see some better behavior, for example, use of internet these days. People are so addicted to that. I myself had pledged this time no Facebook during Ramadan, and I'm still on it.
So it's kind of like Lent, where you give up something too, or you can if you want.
Yeah, it's all your own personal relationship with God. From God, the prescription is, the requirement is to stay away from food, drink, and sexual relationship during the fasting hours, which is dawn to sunset, right? But from the spiritual perspective, ability to recognize God, the ability to connect with God, the ability to understand that my mission statement of life is to please God, is and be loved by God. So that's the, if you ask me, what is the mission statement of a Muslim, male or female, is eventually that one-liner that I love God and God loves me back. That's the mission statement. So the Ramadan, with the increased recitation or connection with Quran, which we believe is the literal word of God, we get close to God. We focus on our deficiencies. We focus on those things that are keeping us away from God. And as an example, it's kind of working towards the angelic behavior. Angels don't eat. They thrive on the remembrance of God. So Muslims use this opportunity, stay away from the terrestrial entity. So according to Muslims, we are a compound of two entities. One is the terrestrial, which is the worldly body, and the celestial, which is the spirit. So these two things are together with us in this world. So if we lessen the focus on the worldly body and focus more on the spiritual entity, there is a great potential to get closer to God.
Amadou, in Columbus, yes. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yes. Hi. Good morning. Ramadan Mubarak to the Dr. Ustaz, to everybody, to every Muslim person who lives in the Columbus area who's listening.
Amadou, I'm going to ask you real quickly, take your mouth a little bit away from the speaker of your phone, because we're getting a lot of static.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm saying Ramadan Mubarak to everybody who's listening. I've been living in Columbus for the last 10 years, and I want to talk about the benefit of Ramadan. I found out by myself. I've been fasting since I was 11 years old, and Ramadan, the beneficial way for me is to clean my mind and my body and to come closer to the God to the every month of Ramadan. Okay. That's my thing. And it's a little bit harder to live, and it's not only to live, but to fast in the Western world where there's a lot of not Muslim people around you. Sometimes it's a big challenge for us, but alhamdulillah, with the grace of God, and we can manage it. But the benefit of the Ramadan is higher than everybody can expect it if you try it one day. And I recommend everybody, even the non-Muslims, to try maybe one day in their life, not to eat like you do today.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot of people, Amadou, thank you very much for the call. I've heard a lot of people who are not Muslim do participate and get involved.
Oh, yes. And interestingly enough, this week We are going to host high school students from Hilliard-Davidson. They'll be joining us for Breaking the Fast. We'll be giving them presentation on Ramadan. So we have these kind of events, and we are also invited in first week of August by the church, which is St. James Episcopal Church, in Columbus on 1st of August. So interfaith relationship with people of other faiths. Ramadan brings people together. And Muslims have this tradition of inviting their neighbors, Muslims or non-Muslims alike, visiting them. And actually, Ramadan has another very interesting, let me tell you my own personal experience.
Could we just take a quick break and then
sure.
then turn to that? You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Look out for the night, most blessed of all nights, most blessed of all nights. Oh, you who believe, take hold of this night and lament to Allah, lament to Allah. Welcome.
Welcome back to All Sides with Dan Fisher. That's from the song Welcome Ramadan. It's a contemporary piece by Zaim Bika to celebrate Islamic observance of Ramadan. It's a special month of the year devoted to inner reflection, God, good works, and self-control. For more than 1.5 billion Muslims around the world, the third week of Ramadan is underway, along with the routine of fasting from sunrise to sunset. Still with me, Shakil Muhammad. He's Outreach Director at the Noor Islamic Cultural Center in Dublin. We were just talking about how Ramadan is also a time of socializing and getting together with family and friends, and not necessarily just, you know, non-Islamic friends as well as, you know.
Absolutely. The Muslims enjoy the month of Ramadan from the social perspective as well. I was in one gathering, and I was listening to two friends meeting with each other, and one said to another, "Oh, blessed be the Ramadan. Thank God I met with you today after so many months because of Ramadan." So a lot of people, they arrange, it's called iftar parties, you know, the breaking the fast mm-hmm. Parties where they meet with each other, they greet each other, they share food and ethnic food. And especially Columbus is blessed with this diversity. We have several different ethnicities in Columbus. So if you visit our Noor Islamic Culture Center, on any night during Ramadan, you can see a good 25 to 30 ethnicities shoulder by shoulder standing with each other listening to the recitation of the imam. So it's a wonderful experience. And one thing, and I'll mm-hmm. also like to point out the specialty of Ramadan, and that is the month of Ramadan is the month of giving, is the month of generosity. As a common practice, a lot of Muslims, they donate their obligatory charity in month of Ramadan. They can do it in any month, but many Muslims tend to...
Is it like tithing or...
It is what?
Like tithing, a percentage of your...
Yeah, it is. It is a percentage of their excess wealth, which is 2.5%. So, for example, if somebody has $10,000 as their savings for a year, they have to give $250. Now, this obligatory charity has to go to the less fortunate people of the community. It's like giving back. So the money should cycle within the society.
And it's not like going to museums or...
No, this money has to go specifically for the poor and needy. And there are a couple of other beneficiaries. But the idea is that the poor should be receiving, the money should be cycling within the society. And there is another, and as a matter of fact, last year, Muslims of the community members, they donated $157,000 in the charity fund that we collect as part of our collection. And this is just a portion of money that people of our community give to the masjid, to the mosque. Mm-hmm. They must be giving to other organizations as well. And then there is another obligation on every household member to give around $10 per person for the sake of poor and needy. So we collected $45,000. So it means around 4,500 people, they donated this money to the mosque, to Noor Islamic Culture Center, and we gave food. We bought food and we distributed that food to the poor and needy. So the idea of the giving generosity is tied with Ramadan, because the expiation of sins, God has linked it with giving. So the more you give, the more sins will be expiated.
Many religions share the ritual of fasting, but joining us now to tell us about others out there that are close or come or parallel to something like Ramadan is Tom Ferguson. He's the dean and professor of church history at Bexley Hall. It's an Episcopal seminary located on the campus of Trinity Lutheran Seminary in Bexley. Tom Ferguson joins us by phone from Idaho. Welcome to the program, Tom.
Good morning, Anne. It's great to be here.
So, what are some other parallel traditions of fasting that are like Ramadan?
Sure. One thing to keep in mind is there's a way in which fasting is something that, in some way, shape, or form, is part of just a whole variety of religious traditions. I mean, we're going to talk a little bit here today about Christianity and Judaism, and especially Islam. But there's also traditions of fasting in Hinduism, in Buddhism, for instance. So it's something that's part of a lot of different kinds of religious systems. Christianity, in particular, received its traditions of fasting from Judaism. Christianity was born in the world of first-century Judaism. And fasting there primarily had a couple of functions. One was, at that time, it was also a sign of mourning. You would fast when you mourned. And I think that speaks to the way in which fasting functioned in a lot of ways in a public and communal kind of function. You didn't fast privately, you fasted publicly. It's just a different way in which public and private kind of work back then. But more specifically and importantly for Christianity, in Judaism, fasting was also in preparation or in commemoration of particularly important or solemn religious festivals. Most important of these is Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, when in ancient Judaism, in that ritual in ancient Judaism in the temple in Jerusalem, you know, the expiation of sins for the people took place. It was such a solemn and holy day of the year that everyone fasted, and especially those who were doing the temple ritual in Jerusalem would fast in preparation for which really was the most solemn event, still is the most solemn event on the Jewish calendar. And that becomes particularly important as early Christianity develops in the first couple centuries. This notion of fasting in preparation for significant, important, or solemn kinds of occasions. You know, in the Bible, Jesus goes out and fasts for 40 days in the wilderness before he begins kind of his public ministry. He goes off and fasts. So fasting is a time of preparation. It becomes particularly important in early Christianity. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, in general, is there sort of this overlay of being closer to God by fasting?
Yeah, it's there's several different ways in which that kind of gets interpreted.
Mm-hmm.
One is it's a way to kind of get your mind off yourself and onto something else. You know, eating is the most basic thing human beings do. And by fasting, you're kind of you're doing something to focus your mind, focus your attention, remind yourself of your bodiliness, and maybe find a way to kind of focus yourself on God instead.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. With me in the studio, Shakil Mohammed. He's Outreach Director at Noor Islamic Cultural Center in Dublin. And on the phone, Tom Ferguson, Dean and Professor at Bexley Hall in Bexley. It is located on the campus at Trinity Lutheran Seminary in Bexley, I should say. For a long time, Tom, Catholics were to fast before Mass on Sunday. There are lots of rules about that. That's changed. Things change over time, but Ramadan doesn't change. Some things never change.
No, it's certainly true. And it's important to note that some things, there's also the way in which some things don't change within Christian traditions as well. I think it's safe to say there used to be more. And that's, you're speaking of kind of another third aspect of fasting.
Okay.
They're sort of fasting for big events like Yom Kippur or Lent. Lent becomes the most important Christian fast in the year. 40 days of fasting in Lent in preparation for the coming at Easter. But a third way in which fasting has tended to function in Judaism and in Christianity is more regular weekly kinds of observances. Ancient Judaism, people would fast on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And so to distinguish themselves, Christians started fasting on Wednesdays and Fridays. I mean, just really received that tradition, but kind of did it in their own way, where particular pious folks would fast for kind of regular observances before receiving communion on Sunday in the Catholic tradition. Or for a while, every single Friday, Roman Catholics would fast. So there's ways, and I think it's safe to say that kind of notion of fasting in Western Christianity,
mm-hmm.
let's keep in mind, yeah, probably has. There's been some loosening on that over the years and a little move back from that. But it's also important to keep in mind that's not the case in other aspects of it. It's still quite common in many aspects of Eastern Orthodox Christianity, for instance. To still continue those kind of weekly fasts, and especially to keep a strict Lenten fast. And also in Christianity, as it's growing in places like Africa and Asia, where that aspect of fasting is an integral part of Christianity as it's growing and exploding in numbers in other parts of the world. But yeah, in the West, there has been kind of an erosion of that aspect of fasting, I think it's safe to say.
Yeah, Amadou, who called in earlier, said sometimes it's kind of tough in this country to do this because everywhere you go, it's eat something and eat more and jumbo size it, and it's kind of ridiculous.
And it's also that it gets back to that public-private as well, especially in the United States, where the notion that faith and piety is kind of a personal and a private thing. Whereas in a lot of other parts of the world, there's a mixture of that. I mean, when I was in Moscow at one point, and the menu at the restaurant had a fasting section to the menu. If you're keeping the fast, here's some things that meet the Eastern Orthodox fast requirements, for instance. So in this culture in particular, it can be very, very hard, not just because of the way in which we relate to food, but also just the aspects of secularization.
Shaquille Muhammad, in the community that fasts during Ramadan, do you try to help each other? Do restaurants have different menus for breaking the fast? Do some restaurants open up earlier before sunrise so that people can eat? Not everybody has a big family to gather with or necessarily wants to cook.
Right. Absolutely. And in our community, there are several restaurants, Muslim-owned restaurants, and actually some non-Muslim-owned restaurants also cater food specifically for the Muslims breaking the fast events. There are a few menu items which are traditional ethnic foods, and those restaurants cook them and cater them. Interestingly enough, during Ramadan, I believe a Muslim tends to eat the most diverse food ever as compared to the rest of the year.
I think I read about that. There's a lot more sweets.
Yes.
Just eating all different. It's like a holiday.
It's actually holiday in a sense that you have holiday from the sins. People work. People are professionals, businessmen, and you know all kind of the whole country works in the Muslim world. The work is going on, but the focus during Ramadan is more on the closeness to God. Lessening focus on the body, more focus on the spirit. That's the intent.
Are certain people released from the obligation of fasting?
Oh yes. For example, people who are sick, people, women who are pregnant, women who are in menstrual cycles, travelers. So there are, and then
why
children.
Why travelers? I read that, and I was wondering why that. Because you don't want them driving a car and getting closer to God. It's dizzy.
And that's the point, when you say dizzy. So Islam does take into consideration the ability to fast. So when you're traveling, you are going through a little bit hardship. For example, and there is obviously some rules for that, how many miles and this okay. and that. But if a person is a traveler, you definitely will be going through some hardship. The food is not probably readily available, or you're driving long miles, long hours, and taking break after few hours. So keeping those things in consideration, in Islam, there is travelers are exempt so that they can focus on their own things.
Tom Ferguson, earlier on we were talking about how Shaquille Muhammad started when he was about 9, participating in Ramadan in the fasting part of it, and then I think our caller said he was about 11. Is there a parallel in other religions that observe fasting in one form or another? With how old you have to be, or do you have to be, for instance, confirmed in the Catholic Church before you're expected to do it, that kind of a thing?
Sure. For instance, in Judaism, that's the whole point of a bar mitzvah and a bat mitzvah, is that's when you accept the obligations of the covenant with God. Mm-hmm. So unless you have accepted them, you're exempt from those aspects of the covenant until you have accepted them and become a son or daughter of the covenant. In Christianity, less so, because the way in which it was when the church went back to baptizing infants, and where infants became incorporated into the community, there wouldn't be that much of a distinction. And because of the way in which it was family-based, so there wasn't a notion that there would be any particular age exemption for fasting. And also to keep in mind, the fasting was never particularly burdensome or onerous, in the sense that it might be in Ramadan.
Now, the types of food one eats during fasting season is another issue. And I think it was Coptic Orthodoxy, fish is banned on some days and allowed on others and that sort of thing. Are there a lot of rules in other religions surrounding what you can eat when you break the fast?
In Eastern Orthodox Christianity, the strict fast of Lent, you're technically not supposed to eat anything that comes out of an animal. So no butter, no oil, no fish. It's a strict fast. It's a strict fast, and similar to the great festival at the end of Ramadan, after the Easter Vigil, in most Orthodox churches, there's just an incredible feast that's spread, not only to celebrate Easter, but also to celebrate the end of the fast and all the things that you couldn't eat before. In Western Christianity, Western Catholicism, the fast enjoined among most people was a fast from meat, and in the Middle Ages, sometimes a fast from other kinds of animal products, oil primarily. And because of the mixture of church and state in the medieval period, too, this was enforced by the government. You know, if you were caught walking down the street chomping on a sausage, you could get fined, get a ticket. Mm-hmm. The way the fasting was mostly from meat, but also because of that blending of church and state, enforced by the government in some places.
Well, Tom Ferguson, I want to thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. Great to be here.
Tom Ferguson, he's the Dean and Professor of Church History at Bexley Hall. It's an Episcopal seminary. It's located on the campus of Trinity Lutheran Seminary in Bexley. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation about fasting. Shaquille Muhammad of the Nora Islamic Cultural Center will stay with us, and we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. That is from the song Welcome Ramadan, a contemporary piece by Zaheen Beka to celebrate Islamic observance of Ramadan, a special month of the year devoted to inner reflection, good works, and self-control and God. And for more than 1.5 billion Muslims around the world, the third week of Ramadan is underway along with the routine of fasting from sunrise to sunset. during the month of Ramadan. Only those who are healthy are expected to fast. Young children are not. It's when they're ready. We've been talking about that with Shakil Muhammad, Outreach Director at Nur Islamic Cultural Center. But even for the healthy, fasting all day long for a whole month does affect the body. Joining us now to discuss the health implications of fasting is Richard Bloomer. He is the chair of the Department of Health and Sports Sciences at the University of Memphis. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anne. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So what happens to the body when it's deprived of food and fluids for basically 12 hours, especially in summertime? It's a longer day.
Well, if you look at the literature, the collective body of literature on fasting, and I know that you're speaking specifically on Ramadan, we get into some other types of fast as well, the results are really mixed. And by that, I mean some studies have shown significant benefits in a variety of health-specific markers. And some of these that listeners would be most familiar with, of course, would be things such as reductions in body weight and reductions in body fat, potential reductions in blood cholesterol levels, the so-called bad cholesterol, the LDL and the total cholesterol, reductions in things such as fasting glucose levels or fasting insulin levels, which are specific to metabolic health that would have implications for individuals, for example, who may be diabetic or pre-diabetic. So we see a variety of different things that are favorable in terms of health outcomes. But when I mention mixed results, if you look at the collective body of literature on Ramadan fasting in particular, I think this is probably the most well-studied fasting protocol that we see in the scientific literature. You'll see that some studies show essentially benefits in certain markers. Other studies show really no effect at all. There's really not much change from pre to post-intervention assessment. And then some studies actually show that there's some negative health outcomes. And a lot of these mixed results are largely due to the fact that the study designs are different in terms of the subject population, whether they're men or women, younger or older, in particular, individuals who may use medications or individuals who may smoke cigarettes. I think that's probably the largest confounding variable, because we see that with smoking cessation, even for a short period of time, just a matter of half the day, we do see some favorable changes in some of these outcome measures.
Shakil Muhammad, is smoking something a lot of people give up during Ramadan?
In fact, during the fasting hours, smoking is not allowed.
Okay.
Right. So some people who are really kind of chain smokers, so after they break fast, they
Nikki
go.
Fits, right?
They go.
Not fun to be around.
Yeah. But those who, again, you know, as it's all individual, again, determination. If somebody's determined that this Ramadan, I'm going to get out of smoking and...
Make a resolution
and
say, okay.
And do your best, and God helps those who do their best.
Richard Bloomer, is there a way to fast? You talked about there can be significant benefits, but is there a way to fast that is healthier than not? And assuming you're otherwise healthy, is there a safer way to fast than not?
Well, we believe so. And again, I'm not certain what you've spoken about up until this point, but we look at a few different types of fast. The ones in the science that are focused on the health benefits of fasting include a few different types. One would be caloric restriction, simply cutting the overall calorie or energy intake of the individual. And that generally that's done, you know, throughout the day. So if someone generally takes in 2,000 calories a day, they may cut their calories down to 1,400 a day, and that would be termed a caloric restriction. And that has been shown to be very favorable in terms of health outcomes, both in humans as well as animal studies. Then we can get into something called alternate day fasting, which, you know, Ramadan is actually fairly close to, but alternate day fasting would be individuals consuming no food or potentially a very small amount of food, up to roughly 500 calories or so one day. And then the subsequent day, after consuming no food or very small amounts, they would consume food essentially as much as they wanted to. So back to their normal intake, if not more than that, and they would alternate back and forth that way. Now, Ramadan, again, is not 24 hours, but if you're looking at a traditional cycle, perhaps you're looking at 12 and 12. And I know that varies depending on time of year and location. Mm-hmm. But if we're looking at 12 and 12, essentially you're getting similar effects. You're depriving the individual for a short period, and then you're essentially allowing them to feed, whether it be, you know, one, two, or three meals during that time. Now, aside from those, we have something called dietary restriction, which is not necessarily cutting the calories, but it's cutting certain food items out of the diet. And we've been studying that almost exclusively over the past several years in the form of a Christian fast called a Daniel fast. And this has been shown to be extremely favorable in a number of health outcomes, favorable in the sense that it mimics what we see with caloric restriction. And we find that it's much more tolerable for human subjects because they're allowed to eat as much food as they want, but we simply have them eliminating several food items that they might typically consume. And most of those items would be packaged food items.
Processed.
It would be high processed foods, high saturated fat foods. And some of your listeners may be familiar with the Daniel fast. But essentially, it's a very stringent vegan-based diet plan that does not allow for the consumption of processed foods, white flour, alcohol, caffeine, and animal products. And we've done modifications of the Daniel fast that include essentially the same guidelines, albeit we allow individuals to consume one serving per day of lean meat and one serving per day of dairy. And we see essentially the same effects. And those effects are striking. In fact, they parallel what we often see with typical drugs like statins that are used for cholesterol reduction or effects that we see with certain drugs that are used for blood pressure reduction. And we see, you know, again, significant changes in body weight. And people generally feel a whole lot better and they're empowered because they're able to consume food in abundance. But it's the right type of food. So
it's so also interesting, though, to hear you talk about this because we've had it, pummeled into our brains since we were very young, most of us, at least in Western culture, that three squares a day is the best way to go. And the more, you know, we learn about it, either small little bits of food throughout the day or you can take a break from eating and it can be healthy.
It can. And I think if you look at the fitness community, you'll see clearly that most individuals are not in any way, shape, or form consuming, you know, the quote-unquote three squares a day, that sort of nonsense. People are consuming meals every 2 to 3 hours, and in the diabetic literature, you'll see that called a nibbling pattern as opposed to a gorging pattern. And for many people, they feel a whole lot better doing that. I've been doing it personally for, you know, 20-plus years, and I couldn't imagine just eating three meals per day. Because in doing so, people have to put in generally higher calorie loads and the body of most individuals cannot, you know, sufficiently and efficiently process, you know, 600, 700, 800, 900 calories in any one sitting. So we do find it beneficial for individuals to consume what we call clean meals and do so regularly throughout the day. They feel very satisfied. The fiber intake is quite high. They're energetic and, quite frankly, they're just healthier individuals. So we really do believe this is a great option for people, in particular those who don't want to cut calories. Now, I think the underlying, you know, idea, though, behind fasting really has nothing to do with health. The underlying reason behind fasting is to become closer to God. And from a Daniel fast perspective, that's Jesus Christ. And many individuals who partake in that fast are doing so for that specific purpose, but then they're saying, wow, I'm getting some additional health benefits here, and I may consider incorporating this into my, you know, daily regimen from this point forward. So I think that's encouraging in that people use the fast kind of as a launch pad to a healthier lifestyle. And looking at the current state of health in our country and many other countries, we need to do something. And that's very clear.
Shaheem Muhammad?
Yeah, and I'd like to also share that in Muslim tradition, not only the month of Ramadan is their whole month for fasting, but as a supplementary fast, people usually, those who are religiously observant, they fast on Mondays and Thursdays, which is every week, 2 days, and some 3 days a month, 15th, 16th, and 17th of the lunar calendar. That's from the tradition of Prophet. His tradition tells us that do not focus too much on the body. Have enough intake to efficiently do your things and effectively do things. But that shouldn't be the focus. Focus should be productivity from the spiritual perspective. Your focus should be towards the closeness to God. And closeness to God is also they're in the service of the humanity. According to Prophet, the best of the humanity are those who are the most beneficent to the humanity.
You mentioned earlier that sometimes people say, okay, this time I'm going to give up smoking because you're not allowed to smoke. And I think we were off there when I was saying, do some other people say, okay, I'm going to start eating healthier overall. This is going to be my kickoff time to, you know, give up sugar or whatever their addiction is. When
absolutely.
It comes to food.
Yeah, absolutely. There's always in the mosques, there is always a reminder about healthy eating. And Islam especially focuses on eating from the healthiness perspective and also from the permissible perspective. So the idea is, whatever, you know, garbage in, garbage out. Mm-hmm. if good thing is being taken in, the goodness will be coming out. So making sure that you're eating healthy food, and also the sustenance that you're earning should be also from the healthy means, so that when you're acquiring your wealth from healthy means, the right, you know, the permissible means, you're buying healthy and permissible food, and you're nourishing your body with the good will be coming out. That's kind of the idea in Islam.
Richard Bloomer, in an article for Nutrition Journal a few years ago, you noted that Muslims tend to consume a greater variety of foods during Ramadan compared to the rest of the year, including more sugary foods. And Shaquille Muhammad and I were talking about that earlier as well. Is there any significance to that nutritionally?
We think so, and this has been reported. We specifically, our group has not studied this, but this was a review paper that you mentioned, and these authors have noted this in some of their work through dietary analysis. We believe it does, because individuals oftentimes, and it kind of gets back to your point, Anne, earlier about consuming the two or three meals per day regimen versus the more frequent pattern. When individuals are deprived of food for a period of time, their mindset in terms of, quote unquote, I'm going to go ahead and eat healthy foods, the foods that are best for me, changes to, I want instant gratification. And instant gratification for a lot of individuals means high calorie, high fat, high sugar, rich meals. And that could have implications in terms of both cardiovascular and metabolic health. So the more frequent pattern does seem to help individuals have better control over what they're doing. Just as an individual, we always say we'll use a medication prophylactically. They don't wait until there's a problem brewing when they start taking their medication. Their physician likely prescribes the medication on a daily basis. And we want to use the medicinal power of food so that we control things like hunger. We control things like increase in fluctuating blood glucose or lower blood glucose, et cetera. And we want to use food for the beneficial properties that food certainly has. So I think the frequent, you know, health option is key. And one thing that we find in our research is that most people simply don't know oftentimes that what they're doing is not optimal for them until they start reading food labels and looking and investigating food packaging. Only then will they realize that this food contains many ingredients that I really do not want to be consuming on a regular basis. It doesn't mean that they have to be perfect and they can never consume, you know, an ice cream cone or a piece of cake again, but they should be fully understanding of what they're doing. And we've discussed this at length. In fact, we have myself and a co-author have a book coming out on this topic titled The Daniel Cure, which essentially uses the Daniel Fast as a platform to move forward into a healthy lifestyle approach. And that will be coming out this fall. But I think it's imperative that people understand what they're doing. And I think we've done a rather poor job at educating individuals in terms of, you know, what really they should and shouldn't be doing in terms of their overall nutritional health.
Well, Richard Bloomer, thank you so much today for joining us to talk about it in terms of Ramadan. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Richard Bloomer, he's chair of Department of Health and Sports Sciences at the University of Memphis. Also, Shaquille Muhammad, outreach director at the Noor Islamic Cultural Center in Dublin. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.